We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College, presented by Harris Teeter, where Tar Heel fans shop for groceries.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. And the show presented by Harris Teeter, assisting you with groceries this basketball season. Each week, one winner is going to receive free groceries for every assist through the Big Four Grocery Assist Sweepstakes. Visit harristeeter.com and look for the Grocery Assist Sweepstakes section to enter. And it is, of course, no fancy dancy remix version. No. Just the original. Because it's Friday.
It's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend. Weekend. Partying, partying. Partying, partying. Fun, 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 fun. Looking forward to the weekend.
Adam, what's up?
You said we were going to convene board meetings to discuss Friday.
Yeah. Weren't you there?
I don't think I got invited to the board meetings.
Yeah.
Just you, Rebecca, Big Grits.
That's right. We all got together. Tar Heel Bird was there. We brought some Coke cans, Mr. Goose Honkers. We all put our heads together and decided sticking with the original.
I think that's the right choice, and that seemed to be the consensus.
Yeah.
I know you don't care about what the people say.
The people are getting a heck of a show today, so the only thing they'll be saying is thank you for this awesome content. Because, Adam, put your threes up, Adam. Triple interview. A rarity here on the Carolina Insider. We are going to talk to Tyler Hansbrough. Ever heard of him, Adam? All-time leading scorer and rebounder in Carolina basketball history. All-time leading scorer in ACC history. TV superstar. Tyler Hansbrough.
I thought you were talking about the ACC Network Extra commentator.
So we actually did this interview before we even knew Tyler was going to do the TV work that he did for the Northeastern game. So we don't talk about that. It's a little bit of a shorter interview, only about 15 or 20 minutes. And that's the reason, Adam, that we are also going to let folks hear from double national champions, Adam. From the tennis side of things, Elizabeth Scotty, from the women's tennis team who just won the ITA indoor national title a couple weeks ago. Simon Søndergaard, from the men's side. Both of those are video pod interviews that we're pulling the audio from. for today. So if you've already seen and heard those, you can move on through. But we wanted to give the opportunity to folks who maybe don't follow the video pod as closely to hear from both of those fine young athletes, because they're both national champions, as Tar Heel tennis continues to be one of the best men's and women's teams in the nation. So Tyler Hansbrough, and then double champs, Adam, in Elizabeth Scotty and Simon Søndergaard.
Well, and you don't have the chance to go out and watch them play this spring, so we thought it might be cool to be able to hear from them so that you know who you're cheering on when you're checking on the internet for the latest scores. And maybe that Tyler Hansbrough interview is shorter because maybe there's more to it that you're not hearing. Or maybe that's just all the time he had.
Adam, you are so sneaky. Guess we'll all find out in the future. Also, of course, we're going to look back at the win over Northeastern. Carolina beats the Huskies by 20 on Wednesday night. We'll talk a little bit about the upcoming schedule, what we believe it to be for the Tar Heels, at least as best as you can at this moment, because there is so much uncertainty for Carolina and for a lot of teams right now. Adam doesn't even know this. Adam, a triumphant return on the pod today. You, sir, better be on your toes, because you're going through the five-second challenge.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Is this a new month?
You just better be ready. Don't concern your pretty little head about the details, Adam.
Wow.
You just know that you better have your thinking cap on today.
Yeah, I can't say that I do, but that'll change before that happens.
So Adam's going through the five-second challenge. I think Adam has a list.
I do.
And more. Adam, before we look back to Wednesday night, a reminder to look ahead to sunnier, warmer days here coming up in the springtime. The birds are chirping, the grass is green. Those, and you're only going to get this if you've been to Pinehurst, those weird-looking squirrels that they have down there. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
What's up with those things?
I don't know.
If you've never been, they're these unique... I mean, honestly, the only place I've ever seen them is in the Pinehurst / Southern Pines area. Ever. They're like these big... They're like black, right? Like big black squirrels. They're weird looking.
It's a fox squirrel.
Yeah, I believe it. So,
it's 26 inches long.
Yeah. So, if you're not going to go for Donald Ross's masterpiece, Pinehurst number 2, if you're not going to go for Gil Hance's stunning redesign of Pinehurst number 4, if you're not going to go for the Cradle of the Fun short course, if you're not going to go to Unwind at the stylish North and South Bar with its arrays of bourbons, whiskeys, and scotches, if you're not going to go for the Pinehurst Brewing Company for craft beers and classic North Carolina barbecue, go for the weird-looking squirrels. The Cradle of American Golf, Pinehurst.com. Plan your visit. Adam, the Tar Heels had a visit. From Northeastern on Wednesday night in the Smith Center. 82-62 the final. Yeah, Carolina looked kind of messy the first 15 minutes or so, and then I thought the last 25 minutes controlled the game, as you would expect Carolina to do against that opponent. And that's not saying anything negative about Northeastern, because I think they're a solid CAA team, and Carolina certainly thanks them for their willingness to come play. And you and I talked about this in various platforms afterwards. I think it's a beneficial game for Carolina. You said this, I think, on the video pod yesterday. You know, it's the type of game that you'd normally play in November and December that just you didn't have those opportunities this year. Nobody did. And so, or you didn't have as many, depending on how you approached your schedule. Carolina approached its schedule by playing very, very difficult teams in the non-conference, by keeping their commitments to some tournaments and ACC Big Ten Challenge and all that stuff. So, I do think this is a valuable game for Carolina to play. How much value it has at this point of the year, I don't know. I did think Eric Big Grits said something interesting in the postgame, a rarity for him. No, I thought it was something, just an angle that I hadn't really thought of it from before. And he said, sometimes it's just beneficial to see the stuff you work on work. He's like, you can run your fast break drill a million times in practice, and you can have success in practice. But then if you play Clemson and Virginia and it just doesn't work the same way, it's like then you start, even if it's not consciously, you start just kind of going, yeah, what? But then you go out there and you do it, and you know Carolina runs up and down the floor and gets 22 points off turnovers and 42 points in the paint and 18 second chance points, all the stuff that they want to do. And to be able to see it work against another opponent, he talked about from the player's perspective, he does think that's valuable. So was this a surprising result? No. Is there any individual thing that you can take out and say, man, the Tar Heels are light years better at this because they played this game? Probably not, but they needed to play, they needed to win, and they needed to go out there and have some success, and they did all of those things.
Most points off the bench all season long, which is, like you said, kind of what you would have expected in a November or a December game. Got a lot of contributions from a lot of different reserves. Our good friend Walker Kessler, I thought, was very good for the second straight game.
Hey, he's been good two games in a row. Certainly Roy Williams knows how to manage his team, but I'll be interested to see if Walker Kessler gets a few more opportunities here because he has started to produce a little bit more consistently here in limited minutes, but look good.
We got to talk to him on the Rapid Reactions pod, and he was talking about just his effort level and how he feels like if you're going to make a mistake, you might as well make it going full speed. And that probably made Roy Williams's heart swell two sizes without knowing why. Andrew Playtech had a good stretch in the first half when Carolina was sort of in a slog and couldn't seem to get going, and he helped them get going. So it was nice to have some Daron Sharp just kind of push some guys around. He had multiple powerful plays.
You know, so our upcoming guest, Tyler Hansbrough, I think he said something like this on the TV broadcast of Daron Sharp needs to realize how big and strong he is. And Adam, he sat right there and basically confirmed what Tyler said. Remember, in that conversation, I think I asked him some question like, when did you realize you were so big? And he's like, I don't really think I'm that big. Daron, you're big. You're big and strong. Play big and strong. And sometimes he does, and then sometimes not as much. And so I think just something to keep in mind as he continues to progress. I think when he fully embraces his big and strongness, it'll be a benefit.
Big man.
Yeah.
Strong man.
Big man, strong man.
And I thought it was a nice testament to Carolina's depth in the post because Garrison Brooks didn't – rare is the time you have a double-double with 11 points and 13 rebounds and you come away feeling like you didn't play your best game, but I don't think he did. Armando Bacot didn't play his best game, but that's okay. Tar Heels just bring in the two big guys off the bench. Everything's fine. And that's a luxury that this year's team has, and Northeastern didn't have the bodies to compete with that. You could see them wearing down. Tyson Walker was awesome in the first half, but then he seemed to get a little tired and tried to make some fancy passes that just aren't going to work. But it was fun watching him in the first half. Well, now I can say it was fun watching him in the first half now that I know he didn't go on to score 50 and lead his team to a win.
I do think he's a great example. And another, like Andrew Goudlock, that Roy Williams likes to tell the story about from College of Charleston now, gosh, a decade ago. They're good players everywhere. There's guys who can hoop everywhere. And if Tyson Walker was on a different team where he doesn't have to shoot it a million times every game, and I mean, I think he may even be more effective. I don't know. And I'm not trying to suggest or say anything about Tyson Walker other than he's a really good basketball player. There are really good basketball players everywhere now where I'm not sure 40 years ago or whatever that a guy like Tyson Walker would have been playing. I'm just not sure there were as many opportunities, exposure to the game, all those different things. There are just so many good players now.
it wouldn't shock me to see Tyson Walker end up at a Virginia Tech or something, and you sit there and go, where did this guy come from?
Right.
And Louisville, if the Tar Heels see them on Saturday, they've got a very good transfer who people are saying, where did he come from?
Harley Jones, Radford transfer.
So that's just more evidence to your point that you can – it doesn't matter who you're playing. They have talented players. It's kind of weird because you feel like – I don't know that I'd say the talent level in the ACC is up, but I feel like talent level in college basketball is up.
I think it's evening out more than anything. But I just think, right, I don't think this is, in fact, we can I pretty confidently say this isn't a very good year in the ACC in relative terms. But for example, like the net ranking, Northeastern had a better net ranking than three teams in the ACC. Now, are there some flaws with the net? Yeah, I think so. Especially in this year where everyone's sample size is smaller, I think that shows some flaws in using that system in a year like this. But having said that, that's because there's better players at more places now. Does that make – did that word salad eventually make sense?
Yeah. Well, and I think the rise of AAU basketball has helped that some because there's a – you can play on a lot of travel teams and go play against the best competition at a tournament that's got 300 teams. And so other teams are going to find you. Northeasterns and Radfords are going to find you because you're at these big events. You're playing against some of the best players in the country, and they get a chance to evaluate you. And you can slip past the Carolinas and Dukes and whoever's, but then go on and have a very productive career somewhere else.
Well, and even – I mean, this you've heard Roy Williams say this. There's guys – I mean, Kerwin Walton is somebody that Roy Williams saw when he was watching somebody else. And he just – man, he was saying, man, that guy can shoot. Let's get some more information on him. And, I mean, so, yes, there's all kinds of stories like that.
Thank goodness he got the more information on him.
Well, I was going to say, so Kerwin, kind of like Garrison Brooks, you leave there going, well, it's not like Kerwin shot the lights out tonight. He was 5 of 10 from the floor and 3 of 7 from 3. He is now 16 of 33 from three-point range in his last six games, and he's made multiple threes 11 times, including six straight games. Kerwin Walton can shoot the basketball. What an asset.
If you had told us back in October that Kerwin Walton would put up that exact stat line that he did against Northeastern in mid-February, we would have been giddy with excitement and thought that sounded great.
Yeah. So – I will one other just individual. Caleb Love was only 2 of 8, and he desperately wants to make his shot more consistently. We all want it to go in more consistently, but 9 assists, 2 turnovers, 3 steals, you'll take. 2 turnovers came very early, and didn't have another one in the final. I don't know the exact number. I'm going to say 35 minutes of the game or so. And again, it's Northeastern, but that's also twice now in the last three games that he set his freshman season high for assists in a game. He had 7 against Duke a couple games ago. So he is, and he sat there and talked to us about it, Adam. He is becoming more of a point guard, I think. And it's not the way college is now. You're thinking, you're sitting there tapping your foot going, why hasn't Caleb Love mastered this point guard position yet? And that's just not how it is. But he is getting better. And the shot needs to go in more consistently, absolutely. But he's getting better at what he's trying to get better at, and that's a credit to him.
The three players who stayed late on Wednesday night, after the Northeastern game, shooting after everybody had left, Walker Kessler, Kerwin Walton, who probably just wanted to see if he could swish them more than just rattle them in, and Caleb Love. So that's three freshmen, and that's three players who, even though they just played a game, are figuring out a way. I think with Caleb Love, can he get to the point where he's okay with that performance and understand that that helped the team win? Because I can't imagine he's had many 2-for-8s in his life where he went home happy. But 9 assists, I can't imagine he's had many 9 assists in his life either. So can he wrap his mind around the idea that that pretty much is doing what he's been asked to do. There's still some decisions that aren't always the best. The very first possession of the game, I thought he had a chance to drive to the basket and for some reason didn't, and then ended up taking a 24-footer. And defensively, he had a bit of a rough evening with Tyson Walker, as did many others, but then Carolina, to their credit, made a good adjustment on him in the second half. So there's going to be ups and downs. You don't have to play against Virginia every single time. And if Carolina happens to get to play Louisville on Saturday, that's more of a fit for the way Caleb Love wants to play, I think. And so it'll be interesting to see what kind of growth he might show there.
Played the most minutes on the team, too, with 31 in the game. So I thought Roy Williams really managed the minutes well. I mean, not that I leave a game going, what in the world was he thinking? I just thought, again, with a game like that, Walker Kessler can go out there and play 16 minutes and have a couple mistakes, but also show you why he's going to be so good. So all in all, successful night for the Tar Heels, and hope that we get to see them play in a more consistent fashion here moving forward, which takes us to our next point, Adam. So right now, Carolina's scheduled to play Louisville Saturday at 6 o'clock. We do know that the Boston College game, which was the game after the Louisville game, has now been postponed. Adam, you have some hot info on this. What all do we know about what we think is going on with Carolina's schedule?
Well, and there'll be more info on this by the time you hear this.
Yeah, by the time you hear this, we'll probably have a more definitive answer on Louisville.
I think Carolina is going to play this weekend either Saturday or Sunday. Hopefully they'll play Louisville as scheduled on Saturday because, as I'm sure we'll discuss, that's an important game for Carolina's NCAA tournament resume. If that game for some reason doesn't happen, there aren't any other ACC team openings at the moment who aren't already on pause. So you can't play a team that's on pause. So Carolina would try to fill that with a non-conference team. And I think you can expect they would find someone for all the reasons we just said about why the Northeastern game was beneficial. And that game would be at the Smith Center. Then next week, the Boston College game is gone. So what the ACC traditionally has done this year is go to the team that has the bye. If you got 15 teams, one's always got a bye. Go to the team that has the bye and ask if they'd be willing to fill in. Well, next week, that team is Pitt. Pitt is not currently scheduled to play in Chapel Hill. So you can imagine that they would probably be asked, you, Pitt, have played quite a few home games. Would you be willing to go on the road and play North Carolina next week on Tuesday, Wednesday, somewhere in there? And they'll have to make that choice. Now, Miami had to make that same choice. And since we haven't seen Miami around the Smith Center, we know what their choice was. If Pitt decides they don't want to come play, then I think you can expect Carolina will again fill that spot with a non-conference team for all the reasons we said about the Northeastern game. We've heard Roy Williams say it. We heard Walker Kessler say it after the Northeastern game that rust accumulates, and he feels like that showed up in some of the other games. So the Tar Heels don't want to do that again, especially this close to what they hope is a postseason. So I think Carolina will play either Saturday or Sunday. I think Carolina will play Tuesday, Wednesday, maybe Thursday. Against whom and what time and on what television network? Don't know the answer to any of this.
Yeah, I mean, it's just important to play. And I know that sounds very basic, but I think Carolina, I mean, how long ago does that win at Pitt feel? One, because it was almost a month ago now, and Carolina just hadn't had any rhythm since then. And I think, at least I felt like, they were starting to find some rhythm and improving. Now, would their record be the exact same? Maybe. I mean, I don't know. But you feel like they got knocked off of that rhythm by losing some games, as far as losing games to postponement after that road game at Pitt. So I think Roy Williams recognizes that his team needs to play to improve. He wants to play at home, which is absolutely the right feeling. This is Carolina's only played 7 times at home. And so they're going to figure out a way to play somebody in the Smith Center. If it's an ACC team, that's all the better. If it's not, then they're going to find somebody to play.
And if you heard Tuesday's pod Well, if you didn't, what are you doing?
What?
Then you heard Clint Gwaltney say he has an actual list in his pocket. We saw the list that has available teams and their net ranking. So it's not like Carolina's just going out and they're going to play Our Lady Lord of the Lakes or whoever that was that Houston played the other day. They are aware that these don't need, if possible, they don't need to be random games. It would be nice if they were games that also were a plus on your resume.
Carolina's net, again, the net isn't the end-all be-all. And if you don't know what the net is, it is this NCAA-created metric system for teams. That is, if you ever heard RPI in the past, it is the new version of the RPI, essentially, that tries to take into consideration who you play, where you play, the result of those games to give you some kind of analytical ranking of teams. I think the difficult part in this particular season is that traditionally when those net rankings come out early in the year, they're wild. Like, you'll see some team that has no business being ranked number 8 is up there. Like, it'll have like Columbia, and I'm literally just picking a name. It'll have like Columbia at 8, and they've played 2 times or something, and they're nowhere near one of the 10 best teams in the country. So that ranking tends to even itself out and normalize as a full year is played. But the challenge here is a full year could be many different things. It could be, according to the NCAA, as few as 13 games or as many as 27 games. And so I don't know if the ranking is as, if you believe it to be a good measurement in a regular year, and there is some debate about that, I think it is less reliable in this particular season. So with all of that as the background, Carolina's net ranking went up 5 spots after the game against Northeastern. Now, some of that may also have had to do with Duke won at Wake and Carolina's win at Duke, because it does take all of that in consideration. But the fact is, Adam, their net ranking went up. And so when you play and you win, that's normally a good thing.
Tar Heels currently 53rd, which is nervous territory if you were picking the field today. But keep in mind, for example, Colgate is 10th.
Right. I mean, let's schedule Colgate.
I legitimately think if Colgate was free, you'd call up Colgate and say, hey, you guys want to come down? We'll pay for you to come down. And you'd be giddy to get a possible game against number 10 in the net. I do think there's been a lot of talk about the bubble. It seems like it's picking up some as regards Carolina. If Carolina had this exact resume in any other year, I think that would be very troublesome, because you're judging it against a normal year in a normal bubble. But it's going to be different this year. Very few teams are playing all their games as scheduled. You're not measured against last year's bubble. You're measured against this year's bubble, which is going to be different. And it's going to be fewer teams with fewer quality wins. Of course, Carolina's not going to beat out Gonzaga for the number 1 seed in the West. You're not trying to get that. You're measured against the other teams that are in your pool, and I'm not sure that pool is as formidable as everyone seems to think it is, although we all know there are people out there in bracketology land who want to get some clicks by having Carolina on the fringe and or out, and we've seen that a lot this week. But if Carolina is able to play games, they've got a chance to make those projections completely meaningless.
Just quickly, notes on Louisville, because it's hard to know. I mean, they have not played since February the 1st. And that's the only game that they've played since January 27th. So you're looking at, you know, 3 full weeks in which Louisville has played 1 game. They're 11-4. They're better at home than they are on the road, as most teams are. 8-1 at home, 3-3 on the road. Yep, you look at their non-conference schedule, and it wasn't very good. They did beat Seton Hall by a point. They lost to Wisconsin by nearly 40. They did beat Kentucky, who, as we know, is not having a great year. And then in conference play, they have a road win at Pitt, road win at BC, road win at Wake. Their road losses in the league are at Miami and at Clemson. They beat Duke at home. Their last action was a random game against Georgia Tech that got scheduled for like 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Monday that they won at home by 16, and then that's the last time they played. They lost Florida State by 13. They do have a home win against Virginia Tech. So, again, I think Louisville, to your point, Adam, and one that you've been trying to make a lot here recently, and we talked some on Tuesday, the damaging part about some of these games that Carolina is not getting the opportunity to play is not just the fact that they aren't playing a game, but it's against teams that I think are good comparable teams to the Tar Heels in a measuring stick kind of way. To use your example from the other day, I think we all understand Carolina is not as good as Virginia at Virginia this year. We also understand that Carolina is likely better than Wake Forest in the Smith Center this season. But Virginia Tech, well, I'm not sure. Both those teams have done some good things, some not good things. Louisville, I'm not sure. And so these are the type of games that help you become more sure. And we just haven't had that opportunity to see Carolina play a lot of those type of teams. I think the only two that come to my mind are Pitt and Clemson. And Carolina won the Pitt game and lost the Clemson game, but it hadn't, you know, been sitting there for a week before that game. So it's just hard to get a feel.
And those were both away.
Right.
I think you could throw Duke in there.
Yeah.
And all three of those were away. So you need some of those even toss-up type of games at home in order to have a balanced sheet of what kind of team you are. Louisville has been really good defensively, but as Jones said, their non-conference schedule is not great, so that's a little dubious. But even in conference games, they've been very good defensively. One of the best defensive efficiency teams in the league in conference games. They go to the free throw line a lot. They don't get hardly any assists, which tells you they're going to drive directly at you, which has been off and on a sore spot for the Tar Heels defensively. They get a ton of points inside the three-point line. They're not great shooting it outside the three-point line. They get the second most points in the league on twos. You can probably guess who number one is in that category. They go to the offensive boards hard. And they've got two really good guards in David Johnson and Carlique Jones. So you by this point, you know Chris Mack. You know they're going to be tough. If they do indeed play, he'll spend the next 24 hours telling them, nobody thinks you can do this coming off a long break. Don't go out there and be a bunch of wimps. And they'll come out and play hard. There's been a couple stories lately where people have tried to evaluate what does the long COVID pause mean in terms of how you play, and it seems like it, as you would expect, you perform about 2 or 3 points worse. But we've seen plenty of examples to the contrary, so it's not a guarantee.
Adam, anything else before we move on to our interviews times three?
I think if Carolina gets to play Louisville and if they win, you will hear someone say, we were able to win this game in part because we played Northeastern on Wednesday.
Yeah. So, again, by the time you hear this, it may already have become official, but certainly keep your ears and eyes open here as we move through the next little bit to see about Carolina's upcoming schedule, because it is in flux. You know what isn't in flux? The quality that LS Tractor brings to you. They're going to knock out any outside chore you have, make it as easy as possible, whether it is your big, large, several weeks type of projects, or just your little baby afternoon projects. LS Tractor has the machine for you. Visit lstractorusa.com to see the difference. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? Okay, we're going to go to Tyler Hansbrough. Then we'll roll straight from that to our double interviews. So these are three separate interviews. The interview with Simon Sondergaard is just Adam doing the interviewing for that one.
No.
I know. More Adam. Who wants that? So we'll talk to Tyler, then we'll go Elizabeth Scotty and Simon Sondergaard. You know who Tyler Hansbrough, Elizabeth Scotty, Simon Sondergaard, members of the women's and men's ITA indoor national title teams for the tennis side of things here at Carolina. So we'll go through all these interviews, come back. Adam's getting the bright light on him for the five-second challenge. We have a list and more all coming up on the Carolina Insider.
Repeat guest today. And in all honesty, we're doing this because this guest is trying to knock us off the top of the podcast.
Seriously.
So we're trying to break peace in the Middle East right here and bring him into the studio, Tyler Hansbrough, and try to persuade him not to knock us off our lofty porch. Tyler,
I think,
just be nice to us now.
I think you guys are safe. me and my buddy, we started a podcast just joking around, a golf buddy, Brandon Staten, and we call it Sleepwalk Worldwide, and we just kind of did it out of fun. And we started doing the games and covering some things that we just want to cover, some topics. And then all of a sudden, one day, all our friends, all our girlfriends wanted to watch The Bachelor, Bachelorette. And so I was like, well, we'll do a review on the podcast. And then all of a sudden, nobody wanted to talk about sports. They just wanted us to cover the podcast or The Bachelorette. And then now we're doing The Bachelor. So we do have a weekly review of The Bachelor and Bachelorette. If you guys are into that, you should check it out. It's real fun. And we're having a good time breaking it down. But it's been kind of fun. Something to do, keep me occupied during quarantine and all this whole situation.
Adam, if I told you in 2009 that one day Tyler Hansbrough would have a podcast breaking down The Bachelor, would you have believed me?
I would have thought I had been hit on the head, perhaps, and like woken up and not known where I was.
That just shows you how diverse Tyler is. Yeah. He can go a lot of different directions.
Well, so Tyler, don't hide your light under a bushel. What's happening with The Bachelor right now? What's your take on what's going on in that world?
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people don't know I have a real soft side. And so when it comes to finding love and dissecting and breaking down what's realistic and, you know, is this true love or not true love? I kind of get emotional, and that's where we're talking about. And we laugh about it, and it is funny, but it is some good. I mean, it's a great conversation to break down the different dynamics of The Bachelor and Bachelorette and all this stuff. It is pretty funny, but there's some awkward moments in there. And I remember back in college, I mean, I was so quiet. I could have never imagined that I would be starting a podcast and then be covering The Bachelor. But I actually started watching the show with my mom, and so we started watching it and have conversations about it. So I've always been kind of up to date on it.
So in all seriousness, I think that's a great point. You were a pretty quiet guy when you were here. Obviously, you're older and more mature now. When did you start realizing that you were comfortable and enjoyed being a little more outward focused?
It took some time. I had a little social anxiety, and I guess, you know, when I was in college, I just kind of blew up so quickly and kind of walked around. I just had some awkward conversations, and I wasn't really the most open person or the most vocal or the most social. So, it took some time to get, you know, to figure that out. And then I just stopped caring what people said or the interactions I had. And I just, you know, I truly feel like I'm myself more now. And I'm, you know, kind of coming out of my shell. And this is something I enjoy doing. And this is one of my good buddies. And we have a great time. But, yeah, so it's been exciting.
How'd you figure out not to care what everybody thought? Jones is still trying to figure
that
out.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so 2 years ago, my New Year's resolution, and I'll put it politely, is stop caring what other people think. And that was a big deal for me because sometimes, you know, I was, you know, sometimes when you play, especially basketball in college, and I was such under, I felt like we were on TV all the time. And I felt like, you know, there's these expectations that the media puts on you, your close friends, family, and everything. And then I just felt overwhelmed at times. I had so many people tell me try to do different things. And then finally, when I was just like, you know what, this is my life. So I'm going to do what I want. And if people don't like that, then, you know, they can live with it. But this is my decision. This is how I'm going to live. And it's not like, you know, I don't care what my parents think. It's not like I don't care what my brothers think. It was more like, why do I care what this guy is that's writing this news article that I've never met? Why do I want to play for him or try to meet that expectation. And, you know, so ever since then, it's been a big, it's been really good for me to have that mindset. And I think if I would have had this mindset early on in my playing days, I think it would have been, I would have been a much better, happier person.
So what else is going on other than in your life right now? What's shaking?
With me is I've been playing in China the past few years, and I've really enjoyed it. I'm getting a little older, 35 now. I know it sounds crazy. Time flies. But, you know, I've been healthy enough to continue to play basketball at this age. I love China. I love the people. The country's been great. Basketball has been great over there. So it's been a great experience. I played in Guangzhou a three years ago, and then I played in Hangzhou 2 years ago. And then last year I played in Sichuan, and I loved all three of the cities. One of my best friends from my hometown went out there with me my first year, Ross Wellen. I called him, and I told him, I was like, listen, once my NBA career is kind of like, you know, getting kind of questionable, I think China's a great place. It's got a good market, good basketball, and I think it's a place where I can go and play and play some quality basketball and have some fun and make some money. And so I was like, but I don't want to go by myself, so be on standby if you want to go. And this guy didn't even have a passport. And so that was step one, getting Ross a passport. And he comes from a town, we're a town of 17,000, and Guangzhou is a town of 17 million. And so when we went there, we both loved it. We had a great time. Basketball was, you know, for me personally, was great. I really enjoyed it, and had a great year. Never thought I would love China like I do. And so Ross actually, after the season was over, he looked at me. He's like, man, I ain't going back. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, man, I can't go back to Poplar Bluff, man. This is too good. He's like, man, I like it out here. There's a lot of things. He started working some camps. He started teaching English and started, you know, teaching basketball to younger kids in China. And then eventually he met his wife in China, and he's been living in China ever since.
Wow.
And so I have a connect, and then he always keeps me up to date what's going on in China. And so it's real easy for me to go back to China and play basketball because I know I have, you know, Ross has been like a brother to me. And so I have that connection in China, and so we can always get back. And, you know, there's no, like, homesick, but, you know, I enjoy going to China and I enjoy playing. And I still feel like I'm really good at what I do.
What is something about China that maybe an average American doesn't know or understand, or something that's really cool over there that maybe you just wouldn't know unless you were there?
Man, it is overwhelming. There's so many things to China. And the first thing that someone always asks, I always get asked, what do you eat? And everyone always, they always ask that question, what do you eat? And I was like, man, China's so big. You can go to McDonald's, you can go to Starbucks. It may be a little different, but you just got to know what you order. And the malls are huge. They have a lot of Western type malls there too. So you see, you recognize a lot of things that you recognize here. So you might get overwhelmed. I mean, you have to learn the train system out. And once you do that, it's a great country. And there's a lot of things that are similar, but also the language barrier is difficult. Because if I were to, you know, just wander in the street, and I'd be like, hey, man, do you know where the mall is? They would throw their arms like, no English. And if you go, you raise your hand and say, mall. And they'd be like, oh, that way. Just don't overwhelm them with too much English. And they'll just say the main point. It's kind of like when I was in college. That's how I talk.
Rebound. dunk.
So, yeah, that's, yeah, so China's been great.
If I had told summer, fall 2005 Tyler Hansbrough, not only are you going to go to China, but you're actually going to like it, what would you have thought the likelihood of that being a true statement would be?
None. I can't believe it. When I first got to China, I mean, it took me at least 5 months. Me and my buddy Ross, I'm like, man, can you believe we're in China? He's like, no, man. And now when I go over there, I was like, man, can you believe you're living in China and you're married in China?
Oh. So you obviously, I mean, you did incredible things at Carolina. Still Carolina's all-time leading scorer, leading rebounder, ACC's all-time leading scorer. Does that stuff matter to you? Has it hit you at some point where you're like, good grace, all these people played at Carolina, and I, Tyler Hansbrough, am the leading scorer?
Yeah, it has hit me, and I take great pride in it. I mean, there's so much work that I put in looking back on my body, on my game. And, you know, I made the perfect decision coming to UNC. I don't think anybody, you know, looking back, I mean, I don't know what took me so long to, you know, commit here, but this place has been amazing. For me to be, you know, the all-time scorer in the ACC, and you look at the history of the great players that have come through here, yeah, it's something that I take a lot of pride in, and it wasn't easy, I'll tell you that. And yeah, it has hit me, and I still work out at the Smith Center. When I walk in there, sometimes I'll glance up, and I'll see my jersey in the rafters, especially in the front row, and it's still crazy for me to see that, and yeah, it's great. I mean, this place is, looking back, I didn't know how much this program, this city, the people, how much this whole place would mean to me until once I left college. Because in college, you kind of live in the moment. You don't really think about that, and you're just a student. But once I left, I didn't realize how great this place was.
Does Carolina translate? You've been around the world now. Does it translate around the world? Do people know you in China as, oh, Tyler Hansbrough, he played for the Tar Heels?
Yeah, I mean, it's that doesn't happen often in China, like maybe two or three times I'm over there. But, yeah, they have a huge basketball following. It's more NBA-oriented in China. And but, you know, people still recognize me wherever I go. For my days at UNC.
All right, one more thing, and then we'll get to talking about the Duke game. What, you are a member of this kind of exclusive club of a national champion. What does that mean? Does that carry extra weight, being a national champion at Carolina?
Oh, yeah, it definitely does. I mean, it creates some good debates, who was the best national championship team. Yeah, it does carry weight, especially, you know, Coach Williams' whole – you know, his three national championships, and just how hard it is to win a national championship. I don't think people really understand that. And yeah. That's what's something that, you know, carries weight with me, is how much work. I mean, we might have been the best team in college 2 years, but we didn't win the national championship. I mean, you have to have a little bit of luck, and you have to have pieces fall in place to win one. And sometimes not the best team in college wins the national championship. And so a lot of people, you know, how hard it is and how much work and how much chemistry the team has to have to hang a national championship, that definitely carries a lot of weight with me. But coming back here, and when you pull up and, you know, we have all these get-togethers in the summer, a lot of former players coming back, and there's some trash talking about. I mean, there's been some great players that didn't get a national championship here.
Yeah.
And then you play pickup, and, you know, a few people will talk a little smack and say, well, I got that ring. And, you know, it's hard to come back from that.
So who is the best championship team?
To me, it's 09. I think 09's the best team to ever play in college basketball, if you ask me. But, you know, it'd definitely be between 09 and 05. 17, they're definitely the third, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
And, I don't know. I mean, a lot of people think the 05. And, you know, obviously, I'm not going to do that. But
if we get to see prime Tyler Hansbrough against prime Sean May in the post, how are you defending Big May, and what are you doing to try to score on him?
Big May, I'd run him. but, we had Ed and Ed Davis coming off the bench. They had Marv coming off the bench, but you know, I'm not sure Big May would line up with me, to be honest with you. He might guard Deion, but you know, Deion was a heck of a player. So, and Ed, he creates problems too. So that, I mean, we had some depth there. And Zeller was actually hurt, which Zeller was a heck of a player. Yeah.
Our guest today is having a big week. Sunday night slash early Monday morning, win a national championship for the Tar Heels. Earlier this week, named ACC Player of the Week, Elizabeth Scotty. What's this week been like for you?
It's been full of a lot of emotions, but overall just super exciting and very good start to the week.
Elizabeth, so we want to talk about the clinching point for Carolina to win the ITA indoors here coming up in a little bit. But as Adam referenced, the entire match against Texas didn't start until I think it was around 10:30 Eastern time late on Sunday night. How do you stay ready when you're not starting until so late in the day?
Well, it's kind of funny because my team always calls me like the grandma in the group, and like my bedtime is 10 o'clock. So it was, I had a very long nap during the day. We sort of knew there was a lot of good teams competing before us that we knew would like kind of have to battle out there. So we were planning on playing later than the predetermined 6:30 that we were supposed to be at. So I took a long, at least 1-2 hour nap. So that's how I stayed awake.
Adam, you and Elizabeth sound like kindred spirits.
Yeah,
there,
that's exactly right. Once Matlock goes off, then you got to go to bed. It's time to get some rest.
Wheel of Fortune's over. It's bedtime. So, Elizabeth, take us through your match. And for Tar Heel fans who don't know, Elizabeth had the clinching point for the Tar Heels in a 4-3 win over Texas to win the ITA indoors. Big comeback for you in this match. Elizabeth, take us all the way through it.
Well, I mean, it was a long match start to finish. I actually had the lead in the first set, up 2-0. I know my opponent pretty well, Charlotte. We have trained together a bit and stuff, so I knew that she was a really good player. It was one of those things, I was in it the whole time. I just wasn't able to get the games, especially with the no-ad scoring. It would be 2-3 points determine, oh, now I'm down 5-4. Now I lost the set 6-4. So going down 0-4 in the second, I still felt like I was in it. But even though like the score is like, you really shouldn't have a chance. But like my team, they just supported me so hard throughout. And Allie, Sanford, and Lex were next to me. And after Lex finished, they were just screaming every single time I won a point. And it just kind of helped me get back into it. And once I got that second set, I was feeling like very confident going into the third. I started playing a little bit looser, like just relaxed, and started ripping balls more. So that, I think, really helped me carry that through the third set.
I assume you're aware of what is happening on other courts as the score is sort of evolving, and you realize that it's down to you, I'm guessing.
Well, I knew Cam had lost because there was a lot of just crazy go Texas things being shouted, and I knew he was down for a while. I'm not a big scoreboard checker. I don't like to look and see what other people are doing, but you can just tell. So I knew that Fee was losing for a little while, but then everyone started, I just heard Fee, like, go Fee, go Tar Heels. So I'm like, okay, I think she's coming back. So I'm like, I'm not gonna look, but it might come down to me, and like that's not normal, I guess, because normally I'm one of the first people off win or lose. I play pretty quickly, so it's kind of a rarity for me.
Elizabeth, what is, when you're down in a match like that, how do you get out of your own head? Like, you know, how do you kind of stay with the process of just, hey, point by point, game by game, just trying to climb back in it, as opposed to like, oh man, I'm way down here. I've got to make all this happen.
No, I mean, it's true what you said. Coach Thompson came up to me and said, it's just one point at a time. Stay focused, really make her earn them. I think I was being just a little bit too carefree with some of those points. And he just said, make her earn all of them, really fight, dig in. And he was like, this is such a good experience. And I'm like, are you sure? I'm down a set in 4-0. I wouldn't put that down as a great experience, but it did become one once I kind of dug in there.
This is the second straight year Carolina's won this event. Tar Heels have had a ton of success overall. Why is Carolina so good in this event?
Coach always says it's kind of our identity tournament. We figure out who we are as a team, and it's just a great bonding experience. I think our captains and our super seniors, Sarah, Lex, and McKenna, they kind of lead us, and they tell us, like, we've been here before, we can do it again, we'll win again, and they get the business done, like, really.
Elizabeth, before we let you go, what is it about Brian Kalbas that has allowed him to build such a successful program? Not just one good year, but year after year after year, have one of the better teams in the nation. What is it about Coach Kalbas, in your opinion, that's allowed him to do that?
It's the players he picks for this team. He picks the best people, and then coming with that, he always gets the top of the crop players based on his results. And just the team values we have. We have Tar Heels, and it's a whole acronym of, like, things. And we have that on our water bottles. We have that on our towels. Like, it's very special to us. And it's all about team-oriented things and just toughness, heart, all that. And I think that we all really try to implement that when we can.
What do you think it does for you as an athlete, and then just for the program as a whole, that Carolina women's tennis is really good, but there are a whole bunch of programs on campus that are really good, that you're constantly surrounded by other athletes who are at the very top of whatever sport they play and teams that are at the top of the country?
I think it's super encouraging because they're going through the same things as you. It's like everyone can relate to one another with, yeah, I missed class, but I had to go win a national title. Like, there's certain things where people are like, no, I've done that too. And you don't feel as alienated, I guess.
Elizabeth, thank you so much for your time. Congratulations on individual success, on the team success, and of course, a long way to go here this season for Carolina's women's tennis team. Undefeated, number one in the nation, eyes towards that NCAA title coming up in the spring. Thank you so much for your time, and congratulations again.
Thank you so much.
You cannot walk across campus these days without hitting a tennis national champion. As you know, Carolina women's team won the ITA National Indoors last weekend. Men's tennis team went up to Champaign, Illinois, did the exact same thing this weekend. We're joined now by Simon Søndergaard, one of those national champions. Simon, congratulations. What was the weekend like for you and the Tar Heels?
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a great feeling. It's been a long time coming, especially for the 50-year seniors. We've been really close to winning it a few times, and finally getting it done is a terrific feeling.
As a team, as you just said, you've always played well in this event, but this is just the second national championship for the men's team. What made the difference this year that enabled you to get over that hump?
I think being in the final last year, we didn't really play in the moment. We were thinking too much about it being the final, and I think we learned a lot from those mistakes last year. And then going into the tournament this year, we really have focused a lot on, you know, focusing on the right things, and we wanted to be there and really compete if we were lucky enough to or good enough to get to the final.
We talked about this some with Elizabeth Scotty last week. Their championship match started very late at night. Your championship match started very late at night. What's it like to just sit around all day Sunday knowing at some point you're going to play for a national championship?
Yeah, especially because the two other days, as you said, we played around noon. So it was definitely a change having to take a nap during the day and kind of just sit around not knowing exactly when we were going to start. And I think some of us had to kind of throw some cold water in our faces and kind of wake up a little bit before the match, because it can be easy, especially in the doubles point where everything goes so fast. You got to be ready from the first point. So I think we managed to do a good job there, even though it could have been easy to maybe start out on the wrong foot.
You mentioned doubles. You're part of one of the top doubles pairs in the nation. What makes a good doubles player?
Well, I think there's many ways to be a good doubles player, but I think at least for Mac and I, it's our fourth season together, and we just really know everything about one another. We don't even have to talk that much to each other when we're playing. We just know I'm gonna do this, Mac's gonna do that, and it just kind of harmonize really well. So we just trust each other completely and know what each other are going to do on the court.
Now, not that you're looking for a new doubles partner, but you did say that your ideal doubles partner would be Conor McGregor. How do you think he would play doubles?
I think he would probably talk, do some more trash talking than Mag and I are doing, but he would maybe be a little bit more aggressive than we are. But yeah, I think I'm doing good with Mag too.
Now, how does a young man from Denmark find the University of North Carolina to play tennis?
I have a friend who we actually used to play at UNC. He graduated in 2015, I think. So, as you said, especially for a foreigner, it's hard to know exactly what to look for when you are going to the U.S. and choosing a college. So, but what really stood out for me about UNC was obviously academically it's a really good school, but athletically as well, and then kind of trusting what my friend was saying about the school and trusting that that the coaches were going to be a good pick for me really stood out. And I trusted that what he was saying was right. And I am really happy that I made the decision.
What was the biggest cultural change in moving from Denmark to Chapel Hill?
Well, I think just growing up, I've always been used to traveling all around Europe, all around the world, but just doing everything by myself and also doing everything in a second language, which kind of the hardest thing for me. I came into my first semester 2 weeks late, so I kind of had to rush into things a little bit. I had some issues with my visa, so I kind of had to adjust perhaps quicker than others to the situation. But I think in the beginning was more the language barrier, having to think and talk in English all the time.
Now, of course, the stakes are high at a national championship because you're playing for a national title. Our sources have told us the stakes may have been even higher for you. Did you agree to grow a mullet if the Tar Heels won the ITAs?
Well, I might have agreed to it, but I got a haircut yesterday. So I guess we'll see if the mullet's really going to happen or not. But yeah, I did agree to it, but we'll see if it's going to happen or not.
Who was the instigator of the mullet agreement?
It was Rinky Hijikata, our Australian fella who is rocking the mullet currently.
Do you feel like that's a pretty strong mullet? Do you feel like you can compete with that level of mullet ability?
I think that might be one of the reasons why I'm doubting it right now, because it wouldn't be nice to have the second best mullet on the team, you know?
That's exactly right. I mean, you don't want to play number two mullet. You want to be the top mullet in the league.
Exactly.
Simon, what is it about Sam Paul that has enabled him? Carolina men's tennis has always been good, but here lately they've been national title contender good. What has he done that's enabled the program to take that next step nationally?
I think that Coach Paul has been doing a really great job, and I think if you want to succeed as a team, you want everyone on the team to really get along and harmonize together. You don't want too many individuals on the team. And I think he's been doing a great job together with Tripp, kind of making us a unit and making us work toward the same goal. And it doesn't matter if you're playing in the lineup or not. Everyone has an important part to play. And I think that was one of the keys why we did so well this weekend.
We appreciate everybody's time there. Tyler Hansbrough, Liz Biscotti, Simon Sondergaard. I do have one piece of bad news. We've only got one see you later big grits from that trio, and that's Tyler Hansbrough. But that's all right. He'll do it with gusto and close out the show in Tyler Hansbrough fashion here coming up in a little bit. I also have some more bad news for you, Adam. Texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for right around 5 seconds. If we were thinking about football right now, that would be like driving the length of a football field with your eyes closed. Think about that. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel. Put that phone down. Let's have a hands-free NC. To learn more, visit trustedchoice.com and find an agent near you. Adam, the return of the five-second challenge.
Is this a permanent return or a one-time return?
It is returning for the foreseeable future.
Okay, so
there will be a time when we're not doing a five-second challenge, but you need to prepare one for next week, if that's what
that was asking. My question, yeah. Yes.
If that's what you're asking, yes, you do.
I usually spend about a week doing my research.
I understand, yeah. So, yeah, go ahead and get that pencil ready to jot down some notes.
All right,
if you're new to the show and don't know about the five-second challenge, Adam and I alternate every week on Friday. One person is a question asker. The other is the answerer. You only have 5 seconds, though, to get as many answers as possible. Most of the questions that we ask have multiple answers. Then, see, the brilliance of this is then we get to talk about it, and it gives us more stuff to talk about.
Right.
So, also, if you're new, our good friend Isaac has provided both Adam and me with a bunch of questions for the five-second challenge. I don't even think I used any of mine that Isaac sent. He sends us, as a Christmas gift each year, questions for each of us to ask the other one so that we don't have to do as much research for the five-second challenge. So, Adam, we will indeed, or I will indeed, be using... I got to move my computer screen so you don't try and take a look there. We will indeed be using one of Isaac's questions today. Adam, it has been a bit of a challenging year for the Tar Heels behind the three-point line. Mm. Mm-hmm. Going into the Northeastern game, Carolina, in fact, had the second lowest three-point percentage in school history. What was trending to be. Behind only, unfortunately, last season. Hmm. None of that is relevant, Adam, other than this is about three-pointers.
Now, this question is about turnovers.
Yeah. It's like an Ellen Game of Games question. In the Roy Williams era, Adam. Oh, I got to get my watch out. Hold on. So you just...
Oh, yeah.
You just know it's in the Roy Williams era.
Roy Williams era. Okay. And I'm thinking it has something to do with three-point shooting teams.
Okay, three-pointers and Roy Williams. That's all we know so far.
Right.
In the Roy Williams era, 9 different players, Adam, have hit 7 or more three-pointers in a single game. Adam?
How many have done it?
You sneaky son of a rascal. 9 different players have hit 7 or more threes in a single game. Adam, your five-second challenge is to name them. Go.
Cole Anthony, Kobe White, Cameron Johnson, Wayne Ellington.
Time. Okay. So you said Cole Anthony, Kobe White, mm-hmm. Wayne Ellington, Cameron Johnson.
Yeah.
Did you say somebody else?
No, but I just thought of one, and that made me say, oh, like that.
Okay. Adam.
I feel good about my 4 answers, though.
So 9 different players. Yep. You said Cole Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Okay.
You said Wayne Ellington. That's correct. Mm. Wayne actually did it 2 times. Mm. You said Cameron Johnson. Adam, that is correct. Mm. And you said Kobe White. Adam, that is correct. Mm-hmm. He also did it twice. As a side note, 3 of those 4 gentlemen, Wayne Ellington.
I'm Wayne Ellington. See you later, Big Grits.
Cameron Johnson.
I'm Cameron Johnson. See you later, Big Grits.
And Kobe White.
I'm Kobe White. See you later, Big Grits.
Former podguests. Mm. So, Adam, there are 5 more Tar Heels who you did not name. Would you care to give them a shot, or do you just want me to read them?
Well, one of them was Joel Berry.
One of them was indeed Joel Berry. Also, former podguest.
I'm Joel Berry. See you later, Big Grits.
I think Raymond Felton might have done it.
Adam, I regret to tell you, Raymond Felton is not.
Well, I bet his teammate is on there.
Hmm. Okay, here are the ones Adam didn't get. I mean, Adam, just one of our all-time favorites, Marcus Paige, on the list.
Yeah.
Just talked to Marcus. We've had Marcus on the pod. We don't have a see you later, Big Grits from Marcus. Hmm. Former podcast, just talked about him on the video pod yesterday.
Yeah, we did.
Justin Jackson.
Yep.
This is Justin Jackson, and we'll see you later, Big Grits.
Adam, not a pod guest, although we had a interview scheduled with this gentleman, and unfortunately we had to cancel at the last second. Will Graves on the list. We're hoping to get Willie G on the pod soon. And then Adam, your boy, at number one, he did it twice. Rashad McCants made 7 one time and made 8 one time in a game.
Congratulations.
Good question from Isaac. And we look forward to more 5-second challenges here coming up in the next few weeks.
I'll start my research.
Yeah. Look up, just go to the top of the email bar, type in Isaac's name in that email that he sent you that said, here's some 5-second challenge questions for Adam. They're right there.
The best is when something happens timely that can then be a 5-second challenge question. Like somebody gets some sort of weird double-double, or Jenny Zeugner comes up with some obscure stat and like the answer is like Steve Previs or something, and then yeah. I can gleefully say, Jones, how could you not have gotten that?
So, thank you, Isaac, and thank you, Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina, for making sure that we keep this fine state of ours, NC, hands-free. Okay, Adam, before we get to your list, we need the Champions Watch, brought to you by UNC Health, dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds and to help keep you in the game and at your very best. See their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports, unchealthcare.org/sports. A lot of stuff going on, Adam, a little bit weather permitting. We're dealing with some weather issues, but what are you keeping an eye on this weekend?
We hope this will happen today at 3 o'clock, the first game of the Scott Forbes era for Carolina baseball. 3 o'clock, they're facing not Kentucky, they're playing James Madison, which actually has a good team, and that game's going to be on the ACC Network. Again, as Jones said, weather permitting, that's a weekend series, 3 o'clock today, 2 o'clock tomorrow, 1 o'clock Sunday. As of now, just the Friday game is on the ACC Network. But that should be a pretty good series. Carolina's got a young team. James Madison's got a good team. And we hope the Tar Heels have a good team as well. But first game with Scott Forbes as head coach.
Also, just want to give a ancillary UNC Health Champions Watch to UNC Women's Lax. They have another big ranked matchup. Already defeated number 6 Stony Brook. Now they're facing number 7 Florida this weekend. Also scheduled to play, I think it's High Point, also this weekend after that. So there are a lot of teams competing and competing at a high level right now. Baseball and women's lacrosse, just 2 examples.
3 number 1 ranked teams on campus right now and 1 number 2 ranked team.
Men's tennis, women's tennis, both number 1. Women's lacrosse, number 1. Men's lacrosse, currently number 2. Of course, field hockey is going to start playing again here soon. I would assume they would be ranked number 1. So, a lot going on. You know where else there's a lot going on, Adam? That beautiful
Pinehurst?
That beautiful list of yours.
Oh, yeah.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
And at Pinehurst with the big squirrels.
Okay, this is a varied list. We haven't mentioned that Boston College fired Jim Christian. But they did. They fired their head coach, Jim Christian, who we like.
Well, look, Jim Christian had not had a ton of success at Boston College. I do like Jim Christian just as a person. He seems very nice. He always is nice to us on the radio network, gives us opposing coach interviews, which if you've listened to us for a while, you know that is our number one qualifier as to whether we like a coach or not. Adam, and certainly you nor I know the ins and outs of this, and there may be an excellent reason for it. Why do it now? If you wanted to do it, wait a month and do it when the season's over. You know, BC's already had a really challenging year, just hadn't won very many games, have had a lot of problems with COVID. They just kicked one of their better players off the team due to multiple COVID infractions. It has been a challenging year for everybody. BC has had a particularly challenging year with the circumstances that everybody's dealing with. I just, and again, there may be something that we just don't know that is likely, but it just seemed like really odd timing to do it now. It's not like you're getting some big jump on the job market. If you knew you were going to do it, it just, why do it now and compared to 3 or 4 weeks from now? And again, who knows? I just, very odd.
Be interesting to see who they go after. We've heard Tommy Amaker's name in the mix for that job. The Vermont head coach has done a really good job. Seems like they might be interested in him. But when will Boston College play basketball again, I think will be interesting to watch.
And, I mean, that's a hard job. That's a hard job. I think they have had as much trouble as anyone moving to the ACC. They are not academically or the university-wise, just athletically, in some respects, like the fact that they do have a broad-based program, they play a lot of sports, they give a lot of opportunities, they're a great academic school. All of those things make sense, I think, for Boston College and the ACC. Obviously, the location makes them a bit of an outlier. They don't really have a natural rival, so to speak, in the league. Maybe Syracuse. I don't really know. They are such an odd. They still feel like a bit of an odd fit. You and I have both been there, and that's not to say Carolina wins the game every single time, because they don't. They certainly have beaten the Tar Heels before, and it is, there are some challenges that you recognize when you go to a BC game that they probably have to deal with just from a support funding standpoint that a place like Carolina or even a place like Clemson probably has to deal with.
I wonder if they look back and think, maybe we had it a little better with Al Skinner than we thought we did.
Oh, I thought you were going to say in the Big East, and I was going to say there's no way they think that because they'd be UConn if they hadn't joined the ACC, but I do wonder if they think that. Al Skinner had them highly competitive. They had an identity, I think, under him, which was they were tough dudes who were just going to fight you, and I mean that in a basketball sense, on the court, and you know, had some guys who didn't care if you had Duke or Carolina on your chest, that they may not be as good as you talent-wise, but they were going to come at you. And I think they've lost that identity, and that also happens when you change over coaches multiple times in a relatively short amount of time.
You didn't want to play Boston College.
Right. You didn't. Yeah, you knew it was going to be – you knew you had to go win the game, that you had to play tough and hard and well to have a chance, no matter what their record was when he was the coach.
Staying on the coaching front, we haven't talked about Jerry Stackhouse very much this year, but he's had a lot going on over there at Vanderbilt. They haven't won a ton. They lost a close game to Kentucky this week. He's been in the news a lot for various things, some of which he's inflicted on himself, and then some of which he's been in the news for an interview he gave, and some people took something he said very politically, and I don't really think he meant it that way. So it's just been an interesting year for him at Vanderbilt, which is an interesting job for him to have ever taken in the first place.
Well, I did not see the second part, the interview and the comment. I did see the fact that he has been very aggressive on social media and has gotten to the point where it seems like he's interacting with individual fans who have said something negative about the program or him or whatever. I think that's a dangerous place to be as a public figure or a head coach, because not everybody's going to like what you do all the time, particularly if you're not winning. Just the nature of social media in general, you're going to hear something negative about yourself. We've talked about that a lot with players and in different situations. And while that is not easy to see or accept, you have to let it roll off your back a little bit, in my opinion. I do think that some of that, and I don't know Jerry Stackhouse well. You and I have talked to him before here in the early days of the podcast, and just in talking to other people who knew him better than me, I think he is a ferocious competitor. I think he, you know, he is tough and wants to win, and I think that's probably where some of that I'm talking about stems from, is that, you know, you're not going to challenge me, and you know, let's go, I'm Jerry Stackhouse. And so yeah, I think some of that's probably that. To your point about the job, I do think Vanderbilt is a hard job.
But not impossible.
Not impossible. You know, Kevin Stallings had success there. Eddie Fogler had some success there. It's not an impossible job, but I do think it's one of those where you have to really understand the fit and the culture. It's like Mack Brown in Carolina football. Like, if you get somebody who fits just right, it can be really good, but it has to be that right fit. And is Jerry Stackhouse right fit there? I don't know. They haven't had great success in his first 2 years. I think you and I talked about this. He made some really unique hires with his staff, where he didn't hire a college coach. It was NBA guys and scouts and things like that that he hired to fill out his assistant coaching staff, which was a different way to approach it. So certainly we wish him to be successful. It has not worked out wins and loss wise so far in his tenure there.
But I do think they play hard and give the appearance to be a well-coached team. Like, I think he can take, if you give him 12 people, he can get the best one an open shot coming out of a timeout with 11 seconds left at the end of the first half. That's different than being the head coach at a major college basketball program, where that type of X and O stuff is about 10% of what you do. And that's what Roy Williams always tells his guys who go into coaching, especially college coaching. Don't think you're going into this because you're going to spend all your time doing basketball. You're going to spend almost none of your time doing basketball once you're the head coach. You're going to spend 70% of it doing stuff you really don't want to do that has nothing to do with basketball.
Yeah, two things on that, because that's not just college basketball. That's college. I mean, we talked about that a lot with why great coordinators don't always become great head coaches. They may be the smartest X and O person in the world, but you need your job as the head coach becomes so much more than just drawing up the right blitz or to have the good RPO look against whatever. And a real world example of that, you were talking about Scott Forbes earlier for Carolina baseball. So Carolina baseball traditionally has a big first pitch dinner every year where, you know, get a couple hundred people and a big dinner, and there's a keynote speaker and you introduce the team and all those things. And I host that event when the basketball schedule allows, like when it works out. I've hosted that several times over the last 10 or 15 years or so. And this year, of course, couldn't do it the same way. So had a Zoom call where Daniel Bard gave a great speech, or it was more of a Q&A with me and Daniel. And we had Daniel on a couple of weeks ago to tell his story, talked a little bit to the coaches, and that included Scott Forbes. Promise I have an end result on all this, Adam. It is, I asked him, you know, Scott, you've been doing this for 6 months now, you know, what surprised you? And his answer was just that. He said, all the non-baseball stuff that you deal with when you're the head coach of a baseball team. He said, there's just the stuff that when you're an assistant, you're worried about your pitching staff, or you're worried about your lineup, or whatever. He said, when you're the head coach, there's just a whole lot of other stuff you got to worry about that never got to your desk when you're the assistant coach. And so, That is, I'm sure it's that way at all level of athletics. I think it is the most that way, if that makes sense, in college athletics, particularly at a Power 5 type of school.
And when you think back when Carolina played Michigan in the Bahamas, not this season, but this past season, and Juwan Howard was sort of in his infancy as the head coach, and we talked to Phil Martelli on the Tar Heel Sports Network for the pregame, and he said that was basically his job, to tell Juwan Howard what Juwan Howard didn't know. Well, Jerry Stackhouse doesn't have Phil Martelli on his staff, and I think that's limited him. But I also think he hasn't had a chance to really recruit because of the worldwide situation.
Absolutely. It's an incredible, and we've said this, incredibly difficult time to be a first-year head coach, or a newer head coach in the first year or two of the tenure.
And there's people who are casting stones at his recruiting, Jeff Goodman, who are boys with the former coach, Bryce Drew, who really don't know, they don't know anything about his recruiting because no one does. Even Jerry Stackhouse doesn't know. I feel like I should probably say the quote he said just to not leave you hanging, because there's no question he said it. He said, "All I can say is 75 million people voted for Trump. That's all I can say. You're not fooling me. I know what it's about. A lot of you hate everything we did when we came here about the staff, the diversity of the staff. It was this or that." Mm.
So, some pretty strong comments.
You're going to get strong comments, right, with Jerry Stackhouse. Like, if you hired Jerry Stackhouse for him to say the right thing.
Both teams played hard.
Yeah. You hired the wrong guy.
Yeah.
So, watch Vanderbilt play. See what you think of him as a coach. And I think we'll find out more about recruiting coming up this summer. Let's see. Oh, we are 3D printing experts.
Oh.
But I did not know about this.
Okay.
There's 3D printed meat.
Now, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, just think. Not long ago, 3D printing didn't make any sense, and then we became experts on that. You can get a juicy sirloin steak hot off a 3D printer. There's an Israeli startup that's doing 3D printed vegan meat.
That really doesn't, like, how do you even do that?
Redefine Meat is the company. They apply proprietary 3D printing technology, meat digital modeling, meat like M-E-A-T, digital modeling, and advanced food formulations to produce animal-free meat.
Somebody needs to get Greg Saban on the phone right now.
Well, I'm not an expert, but I thought there was one key characteristic of meat.
Yeah.
And that is that it was not 3D printed. So,
computerized meat.
There was a story in the Kansas City Star that's gotten some publicity this week where they wanted to get rid of the NCAA basketball tournament selection committee. They say it's sort of a relic from the past. Now, that can't be true because Bubba Cunningham's on it now.
As we know, Bubba's on it.
So we want it to continue for at least as long as Bubba's on it. But they say you could do the exact same thing with advanced stats and metrics. And this specific stat called wins above bubble, which takes into account a whole bunch of stuff.
This is so wrong to me. And I know. The rise of analytics in athletics, and I get it. And I think there's value to some of that. But, Adam, there's also value to the human element of that committee. And there just is.
Well, and the suggestion for this stat was it basically always tells you what you need to do to get in the tournament. So the stat itself says, okay, you need one more good win or whatever to be above the bubble. But I think, isn't part of the popularity of the NCAA tournament this whole bubble discussion and the uncertainty? I think the uncertainty is a selling point, and it's why the tournament makes a lot of money, and there's an entire industry in discussing who might get in. If I just look at a number, Joe Lunardi's going to be out on the street, Jones.
Yeah, we don't need that. Don't need that. Who's going to buy that book?
That's right. So, I mean, yeah, you probably could come up with a stat.
The WAB. Yeah. Wins above bubble. Where are the Tar Heels at in the WAB right now?
I predict I will not live to see the day when Roy Williams in a postgame says something about, well, we really needed this for our WAB. I do not think I will hear of that. So, black and white, yes, you probably could come up with a stat that would do the same job the committee does. But sometimes human imperfections make things better. We know a lot about tennis on the Carolina Insider.
Yeah, we do.
I commend an article to you, Jones, on Salon.com about Wake Forest tennis. They got a lot going on over there in the men's tennis program.
Really?
With Sean Hannity's son.
Hmm.
And well, Sean then. Hannity.
Well, then, I didn't know that.
You really ought to read it. It's.
Can I say I have found myself, Adam, watching a little bit of the Australian Open here recently. It'll be 10:30 or something, and I'll go, and it's like, oh, look at this. It's the Australian Open. Although I will say the grunting is out of control. That's not a new, that's not a hot take.
Is that Monica Seles still doing her grunting?
But I mean, it is, the grunt level is wild. But I do enjoy watching tennis.
Yeah, me too. This article really has nothing to do with the actual playing of tennis. Mm. But I'd be interested to get a take from someone like a Sam Paul or Brian Kalbas, who really understands some of the ins and outs they're having to deal with and what they think of that story.
I'm just going to ask you a question.
Okay.
Not you, Adam.
Oh.
The general you.
Oh.
Where else? I mean, how lucky are we to have such a well-read co-host that Adam is perusing salon.com to get these kind of hot news items for us here on his list? Thank you, Adam.
It doesn't get much hotter than that. Then just wanted to go to the email inbox. David Cameron was very concerned that you had not been able to watch Wedding Crashers, and he suggested the Just Watch app.
Yeah, we've also heard that it's free to watch through Apple TV.
So there you go. You can also stream it on Sling. Do you have Sling?
I'm slingless.
Yeah, me too. Mike Thomas sent us an email about free throws. He wrote as follows. My close one eye and squint at it metric has come to be, if you make more free throws than your opponent takes, you win 95%+ of the time, maybe 98%. I don't know if this is as scientific as the WAB.
That seems high, but okay.
Regardless of percent of makes, if the heels make 6 of 15 and the opponent makes 5 of 5, heels win. If the heels make 20 of 30 and the opponent makes 15 of 19, heels win. Jody Z may be able to prove me wrong, says Mike, but that's my impression after 35+ years of watching college hoops.
Tar Heels currently 209 made free throws. Their opponents have taken 250. Check it. That's Louisville stats that I was just looking at, Adam. Check it. Let's look at the Tar Heel stats. Carolina's made 281. Opponents have shot 316.
Well, but as we know, this not the most dead-eye Tar Heel free throw shooting team of all time.
No. They had their best shooting day percentage-wise at the free throw line against Northeastern, 13 of 16. But they had gone a five-game stretch where they were shooting 52%. But I think the weird part is that came after a five-game stretch where they, as a team, had shot 74% with a very similar amount of attempts in those two five-game samples.
I'll give you a hot nugget. You only heard this on the Carolina Insider podcast.
Came from salon.com.
That's right. So Sean Hannity was playing tennis. The Tar Heels, Roy Williams assigned every single one of his players to shoot 300 free throws this week outside of practice. So not counting the shooting they did in practice. They had until, I think, Thursday afternoon to finish that. And most everybody had done it before Wednesday. So perhaps, Jones, that extra free throw shooting practice paid dividends against the Huskies.
Really quickly, Ashley Poole sent us a tweet, Adam, saying she was enjoying the interviews with the current players. She's really enjoyed the opportunity to get to know the guys better, and she tagged a bunch of the guys that we had on there. And then kind of then back-tagged some of the ones that we haven't had yet, including Garrison Brooks, Leaky Black, Anthony Harris, and Armando Bacot. Of course, Garrison's been on multiple times, so Ashley, if you are a newer listener, we've had Garrison on. Leaky and Armando were both on for shorter interviews it was a little bit before the basketball season started. We have had long interviews with both those gentlemen as well. We've never had Anthony Harris on. We have that is one we'd like to speak to here in the near future. But
Anthony Harris, please come to the principal's office and he would like to speak with you.
But we certainly appreciate all those guys' time. And, yeah, we enjoy getting to know them too, and especially in this year that, yeah, it's been a little different for you and me, Adam, because – we're normally around the players more than we are currently just because we can't be with them on the buses and things like that because we're not traveling with the team, which Adam does some, I do most of the time. So it's just, it's been a little different year. It's been fun for us to get to know those guys when we talk to them in here too.
Yeah. And you definitely learn more about their personality just being around them. And that usually helps when we talk to them. So this year it's been different, but still a fun bunch of guys to talk to. And we would like to check all those that Ashley had on there off our list before we get to summertime.
Quick reminder that we are brought to you in part by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, reminding you, Adam, to practice those three W's, wear, weight, wash. We resolved to keep North Carolina healthy, so I guess Northeastern was where, right?
That's right.
Louisville? Wait. Louisville and or some other team, wait.
Right.
And then
weekend opponent A.
And then midweek opponent next week, you just get ready to wash.
Yeah.
One last thing, Matt Stark sent us a tweet that's he quote tweeted a Washington Post tweet that says Morehouse's new online athlete activism course has a teacher with experience, Chris Weber. And Matt Stark said, what a great reason to invite him to be on the Carolina pod. Hey, we're coming for you, Weber. Adam, as we've talked about before, he's got to be our white whale out there that we have had scheduled that we thought we were doing, but somehow, some way, it always falls through. I'm pretty sure Matt knew that in sending us this tweet because we've talked about it before. And I know Matt's a devoted 100% club listener.
We really were close to pulling that off. And I feel like it would have been really good.
Yep.
And I still feel like Chris Weber may still be sitting there waiting for us to show up.
Yeah.
Don't you have his number?
I do have his number.
But just text him.
Just text him right now.
Chris, it's Jones.
Hey, Chris. Hey, C-Web. It's J. Ainge.
Duh, G. College.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's better. Then he'll know.
Right. Hey, are you still waiting in your room for us to show up with the pod box?
You're still sitting there in Columbus, Ohio? We'll be there soon. One day, Chris Weber.
Yeah, that's right. You won't avoid us forever.
No. We're so much more technologically savvy now, too. Mm-hmm. Chris, let's do this. Let's do this on Zoom or Skype. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's make it happen. No big deal. You, me, G College, him, the aristocrat of tenderness. Just the three of us. Let's go. All right. Adam, anything else before we get out of here?
No.
Okay. As we mentioned, while we did have three guests, we only have one. See you later, Big Grits. But it is Tyler Hansbrough, so that's good. So we're going to let Tyler Hansbrough, now multimedia superstar in addition to his success in professional and college basketball, including his awesome time in China, as we learned. So much to do. We're going to let Tyler and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Tyler Hansbrough. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network, brought to you by Harris Teeter, where Tar Heel fans shop for groceries.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.